third case of the morning, Gutierrez, Birding v. Holder. Mr. Berg.
Are you on it?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Roy F. Berg, and I represent the petitioner of this next matter before you, Mr. Cecilio Gutierrez-Burdin. Your Honors, the respondent has conceded that it was the government's burden to prove alienage in this case. We would submit that the government did not do so. Mr. O'Malley, the trial attorney for the government, conceded as much as that page 185, I believe, of the record, that it was their burden to prove alienage.
But, you know, in order for your position to be to get off the ground, the particular facts listed in this form I-213, it seems to me, would need to be challenged. This isn't just the government coming in and having somebody say, we think Mr. Gutierrez-Burdin is an alien. We have a date of birth. We have a city, state, and country of birth. We've got father's name, mother's name. On and on, you know, and then a statement that he admits that he was a native and citizen of Mexico. So the government has come forward with this information. I think its position is it's met its burden of production, and it was then up to Mr. Gutierrez-Burdin to say, no, I'm not an alien. And he never in any way, either through indirect evidence, through testimony from his mother, through testimony from his teachers, through birth certificates, he never, you know, and so what I'm trying to do is put to one side the fact that he didn't want to testify. Fine, have him not testify. There's all sorts of evidence he could have introduced that could have refuted this very particularized these statements in the form I-213.
Your Honor, the evidence on the I-213, the information on the I-213 was obtained entirely by questioning the respondent. The respondent has, or by questioning, excuse me, my client, the petitioner. Respondent has conceded that.
Right.
It is,
and
our,
so
it is our position that the...
So once you have that information, if he wants to contest his alienage, he has a burden of production. Probably a burden of persuasion, in fact, but let's just say even production. He hasn't satisfied either one.
Your Honor, it is our position that the government first has to prove alienage. The only document they used to prove that was the I-213.
But that's fine. I mean, there's no ban against hearsay in immigration proceedings.
Well, Your Honor, we would submit that this information on the I-213 was obtained through coercion and duress in the matter that
but
my
But there's
client,
no evidence of that either.
We believe that there was, Your Honor. If we look at his affidavit that he submitted and the matter of and how he was arrested. Now, first of all, it was an arrest without a warrant. Respondent refers to a warrant in the record. But if we look closely at the I-213, I believe you have it in your hand there, we can see disposition in the bottom right-hand corner, warrant of arrest, notice to appear. Now, we look at the so-called warrant.
So where does the warrant requirement come in for an immigration arrest?
Your Honor, he was arrested at his parents' residence.
Yeah, I understand that, but what
and there was no warrant, there was no probable cause.
What rule says there has to be a warrant for an immigration, that is to say, a non-criminal arrest?
An immigration arrest can be made without a warrant, but I would submit under the facts of this case, any statements that were made following this type of arrest without a warrant, without probable cause, in someone's home.
Why are you making the warrant relevant, though, when you just said that there was no requirement for one?
Not every immigration arrest, Your Honor, I would submit, requires a warrant.
But this wasn't a 1326 prosecution. This is just...
Someone being arrested in their home without prior notice whatsoever. In other words, the I-213, as respondent has conceded, has no prior information. There was no prior information at all in the immigration, any of their record checks, that he was here in the country undocumented.
That all may be true, but you haven't cited me where in the law there was a requirement for this, for the kind of prior information that you're arguing for.
My position, Your Honor, is that as the only document they submitted to prove their case was the I-213. Without that, they do not have a case.
Why
my
is
position,
that? Yeah, okay, go on.
No. Let me go back a little, because the government says that there was a warrant for Gutierrez Burdin's arrest. Of course, you claim there was a warrant that was for someone else.
Well, the warrant was...
I'm sorry. I really am, Mr. Birdbrook. When we look at page 254 of the administrative record, which the government has cited as evidence of the warrant, are you contending that we will not find a warrant there?
Your Honor, if you look at the warrant at 254, what you'll see is that it was served at Broadview, Illinois.
Right.
This was after the arrest. And the I-213, which I was referring to, disposition, says that the disposition following the arrest was to issue a notice to appear, the NTA, and a warrant for arrest. These were after he was in custody at Broadview. Broadview is the facility of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement where people are taken following arrest. He was arrested in Aurora at his parents' residence. There were, at that point in time, according to the I-213, he was not the subject of who they were looking for. Apparently, they were looking for someone else. We would submit he was roughly and brutally handled. The I-213 shows that he is 63 inches tall, 5'3", 110 pounds.
But the immigration judge doesn't find, even looking at the allegations in his affidavit, conduct so egregious as to amount to a due process violation. And I'm going to answer for you the question I asked, which is to say that the only conceivable source of law that would undermine the information he chose to give them upon his arrest would be the due process clause. But the immigration judge's findings are looking at that. You know, maybe some people were using four-letter words with him and shouting and so on, which is not the greatest behavior, but it wasn't so terrible as to amount to a due process violation.
And I would submit that it was more egregious than just the profanity, just mistreating him. They also they handcuffed him behind his back, picked him up by his arms behind his back. He felt like his arms were going to break.
Well, and the judge,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Is there anything in the record telling us how he was treated when he answered the questions that gave the agents the information that was needed to fill out the I-213?
I believe this affidavit discusses how he was treated at the time of the arrest and how he was, how they talked to him when he was at Broadview.
Yeah,
that's
not my question.
Yeah.
My question is, he's answering the questions. How was he treated at that time?
Well, the only...
In other words, does he nail it down to time? I think...
I believe if we look at his affidavit, that would be the only in the record, Your Honor, just as his affidavit. But it is our position that the government did not meet its burden of proving alienage, and it did not do so by this document. I believe also the document they
submitted an application for asylum.
That was all subsequent, Your Honor.
Where he seems to have conceded that he's a native and citizen of Mexico. I'm not certain why you're still pressing your claim in light of that concession.
Your Honor, that, of course, was submitted much later with the motion to reopen.
But why does that matter if you're here trying to tell us that the government hasn't shown that he's an alien and he admits it all over the place? He admits it in this 213. He admits it later on in the asylum. Are we supposed to just ignore the asylum application?
The asylum application, as I said, Your Honor, was submitted later.
But I'm asking you, why are we supposed to ignore it just because it was submitted later?
An excellent question. It's the stop time rule, Your Honor. The stop time rule in 240, cancellation of removal. Had he been arrested after being here 10 years, he could assert cancellation of removal under Section 240A of the Immigration and Nationality Act and show hardship to his wife and his United States citizen child. So if the arrest was improper and the proceedings can be terminated,
the question. There's a factual issue that you are trying to contest, which is whether Mr. Gutierrez-Berdin is an alien. The record is abundantly clear that he is an alien. Whether he's an alien entitled to stay here because of cancellation of removal, or whether he's an alien entitled to asylum, or whether his treatment was terrible, those are all other fact questions, some of them legal questions. But how can you contest the simple fact, is he an alien?
Because before we get to relief in any removal hearing, the first burden that has to be met is removability. And
but
our argument.
But you can't contest that he's in. I mean, you've admitted it. He's admitted it, not you.
Our position, Your Honor, is that the government had to establish it. And after that point is where we get to these other issues.
But he established it. What do you mean the government has to establish it?
Government has to establish.
He established it for the government.
Your Honor, if you're referring to the asylum application, once again, that's in a motion to reopen a release stage based on violence in Mexico.
So why isn't that waiver of any argument that he might otherwise have had about his alienage status? I mean,
because
he
could
come in a number of ways.
Sure, the only reason it's got to that point, I guess the analogy would be a person arguing on appeal that the conviction was wrong and the sentence was wrong. And our argument is the finding of removability was wrong.
Not
assuming
because
it wasn't,
he wasn't an alien, though. I mean, there's no evidence of anything but that.
The
Maybe
only
it was
evidence,
wrong for other
the,
reasons.
The only evidence of it, Judge Wood, is an unsworn I-213. They presented no witnesses. There's no affidavits, nothing. It was their burden. In the government cites Lopez Mendoza, a decision written by Judge O'Connor, who sat in this court just last week. But the respondent does not cite to footnote number 5 in Lopez Mendoza, in which she says that the Fourth Amendment may apply if the conduct is egregious enough. And I would submit in this case it's not just the Due Process Clause in the Fifth Amendment, but also the Fourth Amendment. Because of the manner that the government acted in this case, the way they treated him, how they tore him brutally from his home, they had no advance notice he was there, there was no warrant for his arrest at that point in time. The warrant for arrest was completed after he was in their custody at Broadview.
You know, let's go to a little different area. Because the government argues that we have no jurisdiction over an appeal for the denial of a request for voluntary departure. Would you concede that this part of the appeal must be dismissed?
As to voluntary departure, Your Honor, I think what it shows, first, it shows Judge Barajos' bias against my client, how he used his affidavit against him and did not look at any of the negative aspects of what the government did in it. I believe that if voluntary departure is denied in the exercise of...
But why does that give us jurisdiction over something that we don't have jurisdiction over?
I believe if it's a question of law, I believe you do have jurisdiction. And I believe that he made an error of law in how he did it, and he violated due process in that he was biased against my client. Therefore, I believe if he simply said in denying the exercise of discretion that was it, then that's another matter. But I believe that he denied it as a matter of law, or the denial was an error as a matter of law, and was a constitutional violation. And I believe that Judge Barajos, and this court has pointed out other cases about Judge Barajos, and I believe he was wrong here. I believe he had made up his mind when we began that hearing that my client was an alien. But it was the government's burden to prove that. The government conceded that. Mr. O'Malley conceded it was their burden. The only document they presented no witnesses whatsoever. They did call my client, and he exercised his right, as this court has noted, to refuse to answer questions and to refuse to incriminate himself. Therefore, the government had the burden. They could have presented arresting officers. The only thing they presented was the I-213, a document that said it was prepared at Department of Justice, Immigration and Naturalization Service, 3 years after that agency, 3 years after that agency ceased to exist.
Yes. No.
It may be neither here nor there, and I understand this court has held that, but that was right on that document. How can it be said to be inherently reliable when it says it was prepared by the Department of Justice when the Department of Justice no longer has jurisdiction over those things? In any event, Your Honor, I believe that my client was entitled to a fair hearing before an impartial arbiter. I believe he did not receive that. I believe the government did not meet its burden of proving that he was an alien. It was their burden to prove that. The only document they submitted, I believe, was based on information they obtained from my client that was the result of coercion and duress. And I reserve whatever time I have left for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Byrd.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Mack?
Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Greg Mack, counsel for the respondent, the Attorney General of the United States. The court
forgive me, but I'd like to start with that very last, I think it was the last point, because you argued that the actions of the agents in arresting Gutierrez-Burdan were not egregious, but were justified because he resisted arrest and he was hostile. But the only evidence that he resisted arrest is from the I-213.
That's correct.
Can a court find that information in a document was obtained with a proper amount of force because that same document tells us that it was a proper amount of force? In other words, you're really arguing that a court should not suppress the document where there is a charge of excessive force because the document tells us the force was justified. And that is truly a circular argument.
Well, Your Honor, I think we look at it in the context of when evidence should come in immigration proceedings, not in the context of criminal proceedings. The question with respect to evidence and admission in the immigration proceedings is whether its admission is fundamentally fair. And this court and the Supreme Court has held that the I-213 is inherently reliable document, and that is where the agents put those statements with respect to him being resistant and combative. So the immigration judge, when looking at whether the I-213 should be suppressed, the immigration judge said the conduct involved here by the agents was mild, did not meet the test set out by the Supreme Court in Lopez-Mendoza, that there was no egregious violation of the Fourth Amendment here.
So what weight was the immigration judge giving to Mr. Gutierrez's affidavit? Because he, in this affidavit, says it feels like his arms are going to break. I mean, it sounds like a fairly rough way of handling handcuffing.
I think the immigration judge looked at the affidavit and at the I-213 and noted that the affidavit, if anything, noted the conduct was mild by the agents. And as I noted in the government's brief, the affidavit scrupulously avoids talking about the timeline and giving context to what the agents actually did. Now, we can suspect that what happened here is that there was a gang sweep and the petitioner was encountered by the agents, and the agents questioned this petitioner, and then the petitioner became resistant and combative, and he was handcuffed. But that's all supposition, and it was petitioner's burden to come to this court, well, first to the immigration judge, and explain, look, they beat me, they tortured me, I was in the back of a police car, I was in my bedroom at midnight when I was asked questions. The affidavit, the four corners of the affidavit, says none of that.
So that's what worries me about this case as much as anything. You know, I begin with the proposition that no matter what, you know, when people are in their homes in this country anyway, officials don't go barging in and disturb them in their homes. And I recognize that the Fourth Amendment is part of criminal procedure, but we also have standards under the Due Process Clause that apply to immigration proceedings. And I want to know if it's the government's position that anyone can barge into any home at any time if they are doing a sweep for illegal aliens.
That is not the government's position, and that is not the facts of these cases here as presented by the four corners of the affidavit. And it would be.
So what are the limits on the government's power to do that? Because it seems to have just gone into this home without any pre-existing arrest warrant. I've looked at that arrest warrant that's in the record, and it does say served by me at Broadview, and the time is a little funny, at 12 o'clock a.m. So it looks like the arrest warrant did not exist at the time of the entry into the house.
And I would agree with that point. The government pointed out that there was a warrant issued in this case.
But it was afterwards.
But it appears to be afterwards. But again, our point would be the petitioner. It was incumbent on the petitioner to point that out. And as the court is well aware, the immigration agents don't need a warrant to arrest somebody that they suspect is illegally or unlawfully
in the
country.
And that's where I get back to my other question. Do you think, I mean, suppose we're in Arizona today, you know, can the ICE agents just go in the door of any home in Arizona they want just because they think somebody who looks like they might be an alien is there?
I would submit that they don't have that authority under the Fourth Amendment, and I don't really think this case is about the Fourth Amendment. The case is about admission of evidence before an immigration judge. And I think one thing is important here. Petitioner could have cleared this all up about with respect to alienage. Could have said, immigration judge Brahaus, I don't belong here. Here's my birth certificate. Here's my naturalization certificate. I'm a U.S. citizen. I don't belong in these proceedings. I'm a U.S. citizen. I don't belong in removal proceedings. So therefore, he could have come forward with that information. I think the Supreme Court has indicated that in the Balamkuski case, saying it's not enough. You may be able to do it in a criminal context, but it's not enough in the immigration cases to simply stand mute on your Fifth Amendment rights.
So is the government's initial burden really just filling out, for all we know, with no particular information, one of these Form I-213s? What does the government have to do to get the ball rolling to shift that burden to the alien or the alleged alien?
Well, I think the government has to provide particularized information, and we have a statement against interest by the alien here. We have the ICE agent recording what the alien said to the ICE agents. He said, "I'm in the country unlawfully. I entered in Mexico and I came back in unlawfully, and I'm amenable to removal proceedings." And I think that's enough, and that's particularly sufficient with respect to removing or proving alienage in this case. So once alienage had been presented on the table in terms of that context, it was incumbent upon the alien to come forward and say, well, this is what happened. This is how they got that information. They beat that information out of me. They twisted my arm. It was the middle of the night. I was in my bedroom, or I was in the back of a police car, or there's something inherently fundamentally wrong with how I was encountered and questioned by these immigration agents, and the affidavit scrupulously avoids any of that statement here, Your Honor.
I forgot to ask you something a few minutes ago, and I just want to clear it up. On page 26 of your brief, you refer to the I-213 as the authenticated I-213. How was it authenticated?
I think it was authenticated by the ICE agent's signature on the form, and I think authentication comes in the form of it being a public record, it being a business record of the ICE authorities. And I think under the federal rules of evidence, which aren't applicable here, but business records are admissible, and under the authentication rule in the federal rule of evidence 9017, public records, that is a form of authentication.
So any time that an immigration agent signs an I-213, it is authenticated?
Yes. And as the Supreme Court and this Court has noted, I-213s are inherently reliable. And again, I think as we pointed out in our brief, immigration proceedings are a search for the truth. They're not sport. And in a criminal context, you may rely on your Fifth Amendment right and put the government to its burden. But in the immigration context, as the Supreme Court pointed out again in that Bellankowski case, it's not simply enough for you to stand mute. There's a strong incentive for you to say, I don't belong in these proceedings. There's a strong incentive for you to say, the government hasn't proven alienage because I'm not an alien. I'm a U.S. citizen because I bring my birth certificate forward or I bring my naturalization certificate forward to the immigration judge. And at that point, the immigration judge, I would think, would be duty-bound to say these proceedings are terminated. Now, with respect to any bias by immigration judge Brajos, he conducted a suppression hearing in this case before moving to removability. So he afforded the petitioner due process here in figuring out alienage and as well as removability. So we would submit that the I-213 was properly admitted. The immigration judge did not abuse his discretion in denying the motion to suppress the I-213, and alienage had been demonstrated. Now, there's a few other issues in this case with respect to the motion denial of the motion to reopen and the denial of the motion to reconsider. With respect to the motion to reopen, I think the board member reasonably concluded that all that was submitted in the motion to reconsider were similar issues that were submitted on appeal, and the board properly denied the motion to reconsider. With respect to the motion to reopen to pursue asylum, it's well settled, I think, that if you're complaining about civil strife and generalized criminal behavior in the country you wish to avoid, that isn't enough for asylum. And so, again, there the board reasonably denied the motion to reopen with respect to asylum. And again, we would submit on the voluntary departure question. This court lacks jurisdiction with respect to that question. It was a decision as a matter of discretion by the immigration judge. This court lacks jurisdiction specifically under the INA. And there is, even with the Real ID Act's preservation of constitutional and legal claims, there is no constitutional claim with respect to bias by Immigration Judge Brajos. Immigration Judge Brajos reasonably looked at the affidavit, which said, "I've never been arrested. I'm
no.
clean."
You know, obviously the jurisdictional statute is what it is, but I can't resist pointing out that if you look at the board's decision of February 6, 2009, there's a very strange statement in it on page 3 in the paragraph discussing voluntary departure, in which it says the respondent has also not presented any evidence of close family ties to the United States or any particular humanitarian considerations, and so on. And so that seems to disregard altogether that he has a U.S. citizen wife, he has a U.S. citizen child, It seems to be an egregious mistake of fact on the part of the board.
But I would submit that's part of the board's and the IJ's discretion with respect to
voluntary
departure.
Well, it's not part of their discretion to just be careless with the facts. I mean, we may have no jurisdiction to fix it, but it's pretty outrageous to think that they can just get the facts wrong or not bother to read the record or whatever they did.
But I think
that's just wrong.
But I think the immigration judge was the one who looked at that closely and said that there wasn't enough in this record.
But this statement is in the board member's opinion. Board Member Gann. It's on page 3, toward the bottom of the third full paragraph, and he just flat gets it wrong. Now, as I say, if there's no jurisdiction with respect to voluntary departure, so be it. But it's disturbing.
Just searching for that for just a
sure.
Moment.
Well, I'm looking at the version that's at the end of the blue brief. In the appendix, I guess it's appendix.
Petitioner's brief in the appendix.
Yeah, petitioner's brief. It's in there in appendix A, right before. It's the page right before appendix B starts, and it's the sentence board member Gant at the end of the third full paragraph. The respondent has also not presented any evidence of close family ties to the United States. I was quite startled to read that.
That's on a appeal to the board in the initial case.
That's right, and I'm just saying it's wrong.
But at that time, I think if the court's talking about the motion to reopen, bringing that information to bear or forward, that motion to reopen wasn't before the board at that time. So, and the petitioner didn't testify in the case, so there wouldn't have been evidence of close family ties or particular humanitarian considerations at that time.
At that time.
So, again, the motion to reopen may have brought up spouse and children and ties to the United States. But at the time the case was before the board, again,
it hadn't
didn't
been
testify.
Put in the record.
Yeah, it wasn't in the record, so it wasn't a mistake of fact, Your Honor. If there's no further questions, we urge the court to deny both petitions for review. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mr. Byrd.
Judge Wood, in further answer to your question, if I may, if we look at the affidavit of page 214, in the affidavit in support of the motion to suppress, which of course was before the immigration court. Point 6 of the affidavit says, I am married to a United States citizen and the father of a United States citizen child. I believe my rights are violated.
So that evidence was in the record, in fact.
It was in the record before Judge Brown's, yes. The respondent has also conceded that the respondent was treated roughly. And if we look at page 37 of his brief, he says that the petition was treated roughly in this context cannot therefore support any claim that his voluntary statements to the agent should be deemed inadmissible. I would submit once again that he was mistreated. The mistreatment and how they arrested him was in violation of the Fourth and the Fifth Amendment. Any evidence that they obtained as a result of that, any statements, should not have been allowed into this record. The only evidence they tried to submit here was the I-213. They could have presented an officer. They could have tried to present other documents. It was their burden to prove alienage. I would submit they did not do so. If there are no further questions, we thank you very much, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Mack. The case is taken under advisement.